Our scripture for this morning comes from the 22nd chapter of Matthew. I think you'll recognize it. Then the Pharisees went and plotted to entrap him in what he said. So they sent their disciples to him, along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know you are sincere and teach the way of God in accordance with truth, and show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality. Tell us then what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not?" But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why are you putting me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the tax." And they brought him a denarius. Then he said to them, "Whose head is this? And whose title?" They answered, "The emperor's." Then he said to them, "Give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's." When they heard this, they were amazed, and they left him and went away. You know, I've realized this week as I was working with this scripture that I finally discovered something that I have. It's not working right. Something that I have in common with Jesus. Evidently, neither of us carry cash. These days, coins have fallen out of interest in light of carrying our electronic currency on these little plastic cards or even our cell phones. In fact, there are ongoing debates about whether we should get rid of the penny, if not minted coins altogether. After all, while it used to be that finding a penny on the ground was considered good luck, if not free money, these days, many of us will walk right past because picking up a penny isn't worth our time. And I imagine one day in the not too distant future, when someone will be preaching on this text and they'll have to explain that coins were small pieces of metal used as currency with historical figures' faces stamped on them. These days, you can get a coin with just about any face on it. Can I have that first slide? Right? Or the next slide. You can even get a coin, go ahead, with Jesus' face on it. Although in light of this text, that seems kind of sacrilegious. You can even have a coin minted with your own image on it. You tell that's me. Last year with the beard. Or there's this one. But the coin that we're talking about today was a denarius and probably looked something like this. And it bore the image of Tiberius Julius Caesar, who was the emperor of Rome in Jesus' day. And the denarius was considered a fair day's wage for a laborer. And it also happened to be the tax that Jews of the day were expected to pay. The earliest known concept of creating and carrying coins goes as far back as the Lydians, somewhere around 600 before this current era. Now, not long after this, the ancient Greeks developed their coinage, which then evolved into ancient Roman coinage as the Roman Empire slowly enveloped the Western world and expanded its domain. In fact, it was the proliferation of Roman currency that led to the development of roads and infrastructure throughout the Roman Empire. Because just as it led to that infrastructure, it continued to lead to a greater and greater ability to travel, as well as the ability to reach further and further into the surrounding countryside. And so it promoted trade with Rome. And at the same time, it promoted emperor worship and ultimately Pax Romana, or the Peace of Rome. The problem is, the Peace of Rome didn't always translate into peace for its subjects, because not only were people now bound by this currency for trade, they were also able to be taxed with this currency. Some, like the Jewish people of Rome, were taxed quite oppressively. So you can see why this idea of paying taxes to the empire was so vehemently despised. But there's a second reason this coinage was loathed by the Jewish people, and that's because it had the image of Caesar stamped on it, which was considered a graven image. And because of this graven image, the denarius could not be used in the temple. And so it had to be exchanged for shekels in order to purchase animals to be sacrificed to God, which then drew further ire because the exchange rate often fluctuated, allowing the money changers to inflate their prices, creating not just despise toward the empire, but division among the Jewish people themselves. I mean, it's for this reason that many of you may recall that upon entering Jerusalem for the last time, Jesus turned over the tables of those exchanging Roman currency in the temple and drove out the sacrifices they were selling. And for Matthew, it's that reason that the religious authorities begin to look for a reason to arrest Jesus. Now, the opening of today's text reminds us that the whole question of the coin is really a premeditated effort to trap Jesus. And so the Pharisees send a band of their disciples along with the Herodians to find Jesus. Now, these two groups are rather strange bedfellows, because the Pharisees are part of the temple elite, sworn to live out the Torah, whereas the Herodians were allied with the occupying Roman government. So this alliance between the Pharisees and the Herodians is based less on what they have in common and more on a common dislike of Jesus. Now, when this group finds Jesus, they don't just come out and ask him the question, right? First they begin with a fair bit of schmooze. They say, "We know what a great religious leader you are and teacher you are, and you're totally impartial and treating everyone the same, seeing the wisdom in both the secular and the sacred. But this isn't about revisiting Jesus' credentials. It's about pandering to the people who've gathered around so that when they give Jesus this gotcha question and they force him to side with either the temple or the taxation, the people will be well aware of his hypocrisy." And so they ask him, "Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not? Or in other words, does the Torah allow payment of taxes to a secular emperor? Now, the Roman tax they're speaking of was levied annually on harvests and personal property and placed a heavy economic burden on the Jewish people, many of whom were already impoverished. But the subject of the tax was a painful and festering wound in first century Palestine, not only because of the resentment the Jewish people felt about being overtaxed by their occupiers, but because it forced them to carry an image of the emperor with an inscription that suggested the emperor's own divine status, which means that even carrying the coin was a violation of Torah. So we can see that not only is this tax offensive politically, it's offensive religiously. And the fact that the tax was administered by fellow Jews, remember Matthew, the tax collector, made it even worse. When it comes to the question, both the disciples of the Pharisees and the Herodians know that no matter which way Jesus answers the question, he's in danger. If he says it's appropriate to pay the tax, he will lose his spiritual authority with the people and risk alienating the oppressed Jews of Palestine. But if he advises against paying it, he risks being accused of fostering sedition and will be branded as a political agitator and most likely arrested. So, of course, Jesus, aware of their ill intent, threads this theological needle with brilliance, refusing to endorse either position and prompting his interrogators to produce a coin. Now, we're not told who produces the coin, but if the idolatrous coin comes from the pocket of a Pharisee, then it proves their hypocrisy. Whereas if it were the Herodians, then it proves they have already sold out to the empire. And we know what happens. Jesus holds up the coin and asks those gathered around whose likeness the coin bears. And the answer is simple: the emperor's, of course. In his seminal work on where Christ intersects with culture, H. Richard Niebuhr laid out three variations concerning how people think about the relationship between the sacred and the secular. Now, the first one is Christ against culture, in which loyalty to Christ and the church entails a rejection of culture and society, because following Christ means rejecting loyalty to any sinful structure or culture. Now, yeah, go ahead and put that first one up. I'm sorry. Wow. Okay, it just says what I just said. Okay, so the first was Christ against culture, right? So second is the Christ of culture, which adopts an uncritical accommodationist perspective where Christianity and culture become fused regardless of their differences, because Jesus is the fulfiller of society's hopes and aspirations anyway. But the third is Christ, so Christ against culture, culture's bad, only Christ. Christ of culture is where the two are melded, the very, very evangelical sort of mindset. But then there's Christ above culture, which is an attempt to synthesize the first two more extreme positions, suggesting that the gospel elevates and validates the best of culture while rejecting that which is antithetical to culture. Now, each of these illuminates, in a way, the question in our text for today. Is something, and it illuminates that it's something that even modern people of faith continue to struggle with. Namely, can we be faithful to both God and government, to both Christ and culture? In affirming the duality that existed between their sacred and secular worlds of Jesus' day, he implies that whatever the mark of the empire belongs to the empire, or whatever bears the mark of the empire belongs to the empire, but whatever bears the mark of God belongs to God. And I'm here to tell you that you bear the mark of God. After all, our creation narratives remind us that we were made in the image of God. The psalmist proclaims that it was God who formed us, who knit us together in our mother's womb. And as Isaiah reassures us, God will never forget us because we bear God's image. God has inscribed us on the palms of God's hands. In this way, the most beautiful thing about this text isn't about coins or graven images. It's about an awareness that we are minted in the image of God, and while our commerce may belong to the world, we belong to God. So the question becomes, what is the nature of a right relationship between obedience to the state and obedience to God? And Jesus answers this question just a few verses later in chapter 22. As the Pharisees ask once again, what is the nature of the law? And Jesus replies, to love the Lord your God with all that you are, and your neighbor as yourself. Revealing that in God's realm, every life is marked with an inscription of its source and destination. And unlike the artificial and arbitrary organization of society, we are bound to God, but we are also bound to one another, having been minted by God. So Caesar may get many or most of the coins and be flattered by his likeness, but the coin of God's realm, our flesh and blood, is the image of God.